this war, things get confused out there. Because there's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. Every man has got a breaking point. You and I have. Walt Kurtz has reached his. And very obviously, he has gone insane. He's out there operating without any decent restraint, totally beyond the pale of any acceptable human conduct.
Your mission is to proceed up the Nung River in a Navy patrol boat. Pick up Colonel Kurtz's path at Nu Mung Ba. When you find the colonel, infiltrate his team and terminate the colonel's command.
Terminate with extreme prejudice.
Welcome to a preview of Now Playing's bonus podcast review of Apocalypse Now.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Hosted by Stuart.
The man is clear in his mind, but his soul is mad.
Jacob.
What are they going to say about him? What are they going to say? He was a kind man. He was a wise man. He had plans. He had wisdom.
And Arnie.
He can be terrible. He can be mean. He can be right.
If you'd like to hear this whole episode, help support our show by backing the Now Playing Podcast Podbean crowdfunding campaign. You can find details at nowplayingpatron.com.
One of the most outstanding officers this country's ever produced. He was brilliant. He was outstanding every way. He was a good man, too. A humanitarian man.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
We train young men to drop fire on people, but their commanders won't allow them to write fuck on their airplane because it's obscene.
Listener discretion is advised.
Let's just get going.
Which way, Captain?
You know which way, Chief.
You're on your own, Captain.
Like you said, Stuart, in a typical film, it would be a naive person that's going to learn about the horrors of war. This person's already seen it, and they want back in. They're going crazy in this civilian life in this hotel room, punching mirrors, bleeding all over the place. I mean, if you've seen The Hurt Locker, it's kind of that same idea as you get addicted to war, and it's just that becomes normal for you, and you have to keep going back. To see this jaded guy having to go on this mission, it almost prepared me for, oh, he's going to team up with Brando by the end of this, because he's already halfway there.
I think that's what we're intended to think, is we are following Kurtz's journey here. Kurtz was a soldier who took missions and was effective at them in his own method. I mean, we're going to be told there's a lot of voiceover here, which I found completely fun. I had no idea that was not Martin Sheen doing the voiceover.
It's not.
It is his brother, Joe Estevez.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Estevez was used as a stand-in for some of it when Sheen had his heart attack, and so some of the long shots. And when they were in the editing room for 3 years, Coppola realized, I need some voiceover, I need some direction, and Sheen wasn't available, and Estevez sounds like Sheen a lot.
Yeah, that was a source of controversy in post-production. Coppola took a long time to come to that realization. It was the editors that were saying, you need a lot more of the dossier, you need a lot more voiceover, you need to explain a lot more. And Coppola's like, nope, nope, nope. I suppose you could have made the movie without it. And normally I would agree, too much voiceover is a killer, but this voiceover has always worked for me. Maybe I was the right age when I heard it, or maybe it's just the dramatic line readings. It was written by a real war correspondent. Coppola didn't write most of this. It's Michael Ayer, and it's just authentic. It's gripping. I wanted a mission, and they brought it up like room service, and when I got it, I'd never want another. It's so ominous to me. The way that this unfolds, I can't tell you how terrified I am for Willard before he even gets on the chopper.
This movie, much like Heart of Darkness, the story, is a tale into madness. And that's why I say we're watching Willard follow Kurtz's journey. He's not starting from a place of complete sanity, but as he goes down, the way this really mirrors the structure of the story is there's different stops. There's 3 stops along the way. And at each stop is basically an act change where things get crazier and crazier. If you're going to have a movie like this, which if you look at the box, if you talk about Apocalypse Now, you're like, it's a war movie. It's really a psychological deconstruction, and I cannot think of too many ways that you can get inside someone's head and watch them go insane that does not involve the revealing of their thoughts. I agree, voiceover is often overused and often a crutch. Here, it was a crutch because they realized it didn't work without it, but it is so damn effective. And yeah, whoever did the line readings, I don't know if Martin did any, but they're really good. And I think it's lucky because you watch the film. First of all, it's gorgeously shot. Like every single frame. There was a book for Star Wars called Frames where they took shots of the movie and put them in this giant oversized book, and it cost $5,000. I did not buy it, but it was just, you turn it, it was a picture book, and it was like, here is this frame of the movie, really large. I think you could do that with almost every frame of Apocalypse Now. Every single shot here is gorgeous, and they had all the footage to have Sheen reacting to voiceover that wasn't there. You see him looking off in the distance, looking wistful, looking concerned, and it all meshes. I'm sure it's from a bunch of different takes, but it all really conveys visually the emotion coming through in the voiceover.
Vittorio Storaro is one of my favorite cinematographers, might be my favorite. It's the reason why I thought I wanted to be a cinematographer and took so many film classes. And then I remember being in a changing bag at one point on a set and going, I don't ever want to do this again. It's really hard. And of course, they don't even load film anymore. It's all digital. But yes, it is because of this movie that I cared so much about lighting and visual composition and technique. He's so beautiful. And not just in this movie. I mean, you can watch The Last Emperor and anything the man's ever shot, with the exception of maybe Exorcist 4. It really is just gorgeous. Put it in a book, hang it on your wall imagery.
Hey, if you have to watch The Exorcist 4, that is the best part of it, was the filming.
And of course, this is where we meet General Corman and Colonel Lucas, also known as G.D. Spradling and Han Solo.
You don't even see Harrison Ford's face you hear his voice before. I'm like, wait, that's Harrison Ford's voice. I don't remember him being in this. And then you finally do see him. It's him. He's here.
What I find funny is, why is he Lucas? They were allowed to pick their own names. And he's like, you know, George was really good to me, giving me that role in American Graffiti. You think about this. This was edited for so long, he hadn't filmed Star Wars yet, nor had he gotten a nose job. I think he got a nose job. Look at the nose in this.
Well, then, does Coppola have a connection to Corman? Because there's a General Corman, and I'm thinking about Roger Corman.
You got it right. That's exactly one of the first men to give him a job was Dementia 13. It's not bad for a Corman movie. It's a pretty good horror movie. Go check it out. But yeah, one of Coppola's earliest, his break came to him through Roger Corman.
I have to ask, there's another character in this scene who...
Oh, my favorite.
He finally speaks. I think it's Jerry.
Yes.
He's just odd looking. He doesn't look military. He's got this bowl cut of gray hair, and he just stands around most of the time. And it's always characters like this that I love in film. Like, just some character that seems out of place, and you're like, why is he here? Is this just an extra stand? But he speaks, so they had to pay him more than the extra rate. But he only says, yeah, terminate with extreme prejudice. I love this character. I want to know more about Jerry.
Yeah. When you read the book, Joseph Conrad, when the guy gets his mission, he steps out and there are women knitting. It's an omen of fate. You know, that's usually the way fate is represented. And it's kind of scary on the page. But Jerry's better than that. Jerry in that bowl cut. I agree. It's the fact that he says nothing for the entire time. Everyone else is explaining how it's going to go and trying to put a sugarcoat to the fact that they want him to get on a boat, go beyond the borders of the war itself, find a rogue soldier in Cambodia and kill him somehow. And this guy, that's all that he cares about. Terminate with extreme prejudice. He's CIA. Obviously, he is the people that are really crafting this.
He's also the assistant director of the film. And we've actually seen him. He was also played, quote, salesman, unquote, in Rocky II. So this guy, he does a lot of assistant director stuff. And so you have two people taking the names of directors and one who actually is one in this scene.
Yeah. And Willard, again, it would have been something to write this where Willard was innocent and saying, okay, I'll go and see what I can do. And then maybe he finds out along the way, oh, wait, you want me to kill him? Or, oh, I report back and tell you he's gone rogue, and now you're telling me I have to kill him. That would have been a more dramatic story. That would have made Willard a more active character. Instead, he's going to be a very passive character. For much of the film, he is going to just look very depressed. Normally, it's not a great way to write it, But I do think the combination of Sheen in his prime and just the audience and the way we might feel watching Vietnam from back home, it feels right. I mean, keep in mind, everyone felt like they knew something about Vietnam because it was the war that came into your living room. Because of TV news, people could see war in a way that they never had before. They could see past the propaganda. So I think a lot of us felt like Willard in thinking about Vietnam.
And Willard was already an assassin. It wasn't like he was being asked to do anything he hadn't done before. I love how he comes in and they're asking him about all these missions. And finally, he's like, I know nothing about them. If I did, I couldn't tell you, but I know nothing about them.
Yeah, there's a great line where he's like, oh, I've killed six for sure, but this one's an American. And that's what seems different is he hasn't had to assassinate another military guy for the U.S. military. There is a plot point that comes in at the end. I wonder if I missed it during this whole discussion. There's this whole thing about an airstrike. Does that get brought up during this scene? It seems like out of the blue when it comes up at the end. I was wondering if I missed it, that they could just fly in and bomb the place and he doesn't actually have to go in and get his hands dirty.
Well, they don't know where he is. Terminate with extreme prejudice however you can. If that's how they have to do it, that's how they have to do it. They'd probably prefer that the blood be specifically on this guy's hands. If you can choke him out, great. But if you just, all you can do is tell us where he's at, yeah, we'll drop some napalm and we'll make this go away. All they know is this is an embarrassment for them. And this was kind of a story. It was one that I did not know, but in researching this movie, I guess there was a Green Beret who was court-martialed for having killed South Vietnamese. They weren't American, but they were American-friendly. And there was a real debate as to whether that was ethical or whether it was the right choice. From an outsider armchair quarterbacking it all, well, how can you accuse anyone of a moral crime when you're in war?
And theoretically, according to his story, the person he killed was a double agent. So while he was presumably South Vietnamese, he was executed as having been rooted out as an enemy, and that colonel was never convicted of the crime because the CIA just simply wouldn't testify against him.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to talk about our secrets in the court of law. And yeah, I get it. Some things are better not known, probably. I'm better off not knowing some of the things our government does. So this is where Willard is going to meet PBR Street Gang, which for years I thought was slang for Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I never thought it stood for that, but if you named my college parties when we were all really poor, you could just be saying we were having a PBR Street Gang party.
Yes, I was part of that team, but no, this is Plastic Boat River. These are real boats that really patrolled, and the idea is that they're lightweight, and so they can't be picked up by choppers and dropped where they need to be.
It's a really interesting crew. My memory coming back to this, I knew Larry Fishburne was in it. His first film, 14 years old.
He's 14 in this?
Yeah, 16 when they finished because it took so long to shoot. But
wow.
Yes, his character is 17 years old.
17, yeah.
But he is actually 14 years old. Coppola was like, you know, that's his thing. Is you can say this movie's not realistic, but he really did strive for authenticity. He really wanted people to know that young kids went over there and died. And so I'm going to get someone so young that it's going to register on film. Because sometimes, you know, a 17, 18 year old, they can look older. But there's no mistaking it. Larry just looks like a kid.
And apparently Dennis Hopper got him hooked on heroin over there. So What a great youth start there.
I would not want to have been a teenager on this set. I can just tell you that.
I wouldn't want to be an adult on this set.
Perhaps not. But yeah, he represents the average kid. And then we have the chief, Phillips, the one I really respect. He's doing his job. I guess I've just been thrust in that position so many times where I'm like, I don't agree with this, but I'm just going to steer this boat along and I don't even know where I'm going. And that's the real resentment, is he has no idea where he's going and he just has to take orders from this guy who's giving him nothing.
I know that actor, Albert Hall, is an American, but is he doing some kind of accent in this? I couldn't quite tell. When watching the film, I did not place him as an American.
No, I would say the elocution feels very prep school. To me, it feels like he is well-educated, well-bred, and probably resentful that he hasn't advanced more, that he's waiting for a promotion so he doesn't have to take orders from these people. And he'll later reveal he's already done this once. There's another guy that's already gone on this. Willard is assassin number two, and he's steered both of them to this river, and he doesn't know what's going on. He just knows he doesn't like it.
Ferrying yet another boy up there to be killed.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure. I do love his scenes in the Redux cut. There's one scene later on that we'll get to, but he is fleshed out more in that cut. I think I like his character more in that cut.
If you'd like to hear this whole episode, help support our show by backing the Now Playing Podcast Podbean crowdfunding campaign. Backers of $10 or more will get 20 exclusive movie reviews not available anywhere else, including reviews of The Untouchables, Enter the Dragon, Goodfellas, Beetlejuice, The Lego Batman Movie, Galaxy Quest, Hook, and more. Plus, a new bonus review is added every month. You can find details at nowplayingpatron.com.
Fuck, man, this is better than Disneyland.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Have you ever considered any real freedoms, the opinion of others, even the opinions of yourself?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
I knew the risks, or imagined I knew. But the thing I felt the most, much stronger than fear, was the desire to confront him.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. Yeah. 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 Yeah.